Call to order here.
I knew you were going to finish. I think we need to get going quickly because we've got a lot on the agenda here this month. We'll see what we can get through. I know that Mike's already offered if we can't get to the final site plan review process, then we'll shift that off till December. So start with introductions. Helen Devery, Berger Aban.
Greg Shea for Clark County Development Engineering.
Nicole Snyder.
Yeah. Community
Eric Lima, State Engineering.
Tom Hardy, Berger Aban.
Andrew Gunther, BLS Engineering.
Steve Bacon, Substitutional Wastewater.
Mike Ogden, Wilson Engineering.
Jamie Hudley, Berger Aban.
And then introductions from the audience.
Ron Marenda, Clark County Environmental Services. I'm Issa Kwadi from the Most Development
Engineering. Diane Lapp, Public Works Engineering.
Jeff Frederick, Community Development, Urban Services.
Great, thanks. And a reminder that the meeting's been recorded and the recording will be posted to the county's website. That's consistent with our practice for the last few months. So first on the agenda is the minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review them?
I haven't. I moved it off.
Any discussion? All in favour?
Aye.
Okay. Upcoming events. Greg.
I'll go quickly on this. It's on the, if you turn over your agenda there, it's an evening meeting Tuesday, November the 19th, two Board of County Commissioner hearings there. One transportation improvement program / annual reviews and dockets. If you need a county contact on that, either Steve Schulte or Bill Wright. Fifth Plain Creek, it's been out there a little bit. Jose Alvarez is the county contact on that. The following week, November 26th, back in the morning, Tuesday, 10 a.m., the BOCC hearing is on the adoption of changes to kennels. Paul Scarpelli is the contact on that. And then finally, BOCC work session, Parks Foundation and New Parks Department, Wednesday, December 4th. That's a work session, 11 a.m. Our director, Pete Capel, would be a great contact for that if you have any questions. Planning Commission, the first one, a work session, the fall biannuals. Thank you, Jan, again, for being with us. That's in the rearview mirror there already. Thursday, November 7th, that did happen, 5:30 p.m., and then an upcoming hearing on that Thursday, November 21st, 6:30 p.m.
Okay, any questions on those events? Okay, correspondence. We've got the fall biannuals in here. Is this just an update from Jan?
I think so, yep. He's with us there.
Okay. Sure, thanks.
I was just looking at the handout, and unfortunately, the version, I sent the version out, and I didn't intend to have the edits showing like they are. It might be a little bit confusing. For some reason, my version in the Word document, every time I open it up, it reverts back and try and change this document. And I guess when I sent it, it reverted back again to the track change version. So hopefully it's not all that confusing the way it is what you've got now. So there was some discussion on a number of items in the last meeting, and I'm not sure how much time we want to spend on these, or if everybody had a chance to look at them, has any outstanding concerns. We made some changes to the stopping site distance provisions and creek that we overgo. Item number 11. So we've been working on that, and then Jaws, Tom, and his group created some drawings, some illustrated drawings. That wouldn't be intended to go with the code, but at least for use in illustrating some of these concepts. Gold curb, at this point, we still are proposing that gold curb is prohibited except on cul-de-sacs. If you guys, if you want to propose something else, you can do that. We've elaborated some of the language on the width of corner lot driveways, and we are now saying that driveway can be limited to 20 feet.
Where is that at?
Let's see, that would be item number 20, I believe. Yeah, item number 20 is on page 28. And so under 4D1D, corner lot driveway shall be limited, shall be limited 50 feet wide in the intersection property line with the intersection driveway, or in the case where this is a practical, the driveway may be limited to 20 feet in width and located 5 feet from property line. So,
just a clarification, please. So you've got a lot that's 50 feet wide.
So typically you're supposed to have the driveways, you know, I mean, this language wasn't originally intended for small lots like that. So there's language in here that accommodates the fact that sometimes your driveway can't be 50 feet away from the intersection.
Where's that language at, please?
It's on page 28.
You're
36.
Yeah,
36.
Page
36.
Yeah,
okay,
I'll look on that for
there
it
sorry
is.
About
okay.
So, where would. Oh, I see. You need a road mod to put a driveway in that case?
That's how we put Ali talk about. He deals with this all the time, so.
Yeah, actually the code says that you need to be 50 feet away the nearest edge from the intersection.
Sure.
And if you cannot make it, you have to be 5 feet away from the farthest edge of the driveway.
Right.
We had some issues with that because as a forest policy, we were limiting those to 12 feet.
Right.
Unless they get some type of a minor deviation to increase it. We met with one of the commissioners and we decided to allow 20 because 20 wouldn't work for most lots. And increase it to 20 without any minor deviation or growth mark.
So
you're
actually
limited
to 12 now?
Yeah, because
no,
it says
20.
You have to be 50 feet away. So the argument was, where does it say I have to be 12 feet, which
that's,
is the minimum.
Yeah.
But if you don't meet the 50, doesn't mean you can get 35 feet. So we've been going back and forth on that. It doesn't spell out that it's limited to 12 feet, but it's intended, because when it says you're not in compliance with the 50 foot, doesn't mean you can have it as wide as possible. So we've been doing minor deviation for up to 20 feet, 24 feet in some cases when we don't have a lot of traffic going through the intersection, or it depends what quadrant you're in. In some of the quadrant, you may not have the clear vision issue because the people are going to be turning not right at the corner. But for example, the northeast corner, if you have a lot which is oriented lengthwise, when people come around, you're not going to have much time to stop if somebody backing out. I may have to draw something.
Yes, no, I get that part. That, just a clarification on the joint use driveway. If you want to go over 20 feet and you don't have that spacing, because it would really be a 50 foot corner on a corner lot. Very, very few lots are that wide where you can have, you know,
that's
basically.
A
foot. Yeah, you need like 80, 75. Yeah.
So I'm sorry, you were talking about the joint driveway.
The joint. So if you do a shared driveway and you stack them together with zero off the property line, can you then go to a 30-foot driveway?
Yeah, I mean that's.
So you're not limited to 20 in shared.
Right. This is for a single driveway on a corner lot that doesn't have the width that allows the 50 foot. But again, we've been road modding for anything over 12. Right now we are allowing 20. It should work for 2-car and 3-car garages. It is a little tight for 3-car garage, but that you cannot go all the way to the intersection.
Yeah. So when you do if you have two back-to-back three-car garages, you might have a 60-foot driveway drop. Is that going to be acceptable?
35 is maximum. I mean, we can it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, but they're back-to-back then. So you have your share of that.
Yeah, again, you know, we have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. In some cases, we still might have to do a minor deviation. But this 20-foot is allowed out without deviation. The people who brought this up in the commission are very happy with this, so I'm not sure what they think or what you want to recommend in view of what we are doing.
Eric, why would they have to be shared?
It's in a coverage area. So when you read the language, it's a limited to 20 feet, located 5 feet from the property line away from the intersection, or as a joint use driveway
at
the property line.
Or as a very
obvious. So when you do a joint use, a lot of times it's a very wide. It's going to be a joint use. You have 2-3 car garages. Your drop's going to be way. It's going to be larger.
But typically, that would be two separate driveways that would 10 feet in between.
What I've seen before is you share them and you have one. Like a very large drop, and they're just sharing the line, basically. So you get it, you don't do the 5 feet. You push them both up against the property line, and you might have, say, 2 20-foot driveways, say a 40-foot drop. That's not uncommon.
Okay.
And then in the middle, it's just...
Yeah, the lot away from the intersection, you can go up to 35. There is no limitation there.
Yeah.
And whatever you can get from here, so up to 40 and 50. Which is plenty.
Okay, John, other changes we need to be aware of?
Sorry.
Are there other changes we need to be aware of, updates?
On other items?
Yeah.
Well, there's the item on the three lots, how many lots can access via the shared driveway. There's just some additional, a little bit more explanation. Fire marshal. Explain to me that this three number may have been decided on three because of the old fire code. Under the old fire code, you could access a three-unit duplex with a 12-foot wide driveway. Once you got to four, the fire code required 20 feet wide. So maybe that was some of the reasoning why three lots were taken instead of four. But you know, we don't have definitive engineering studies that say that explain it any further. We're using three lots for a reason, or for general reasons. That's what we got. Number 23. Deals with setbacks for retaining walls, and we propose language that makes exceptions so they don't have to meet the setbacks if they are internal to a subdivision or if they are abutting a road right away or road easement, although you can't have them blocking site distance, so that's a caveat in charging that. And we also have language that if you own both lots, you can build a retaining wall right up to your property line. The lots you have ownership by the lot. So hopefully that's addressed some of the recommendations that have been made in the past. Let's see.
Yeah.
Item number 28, we've allowed gravel for other uses in addition to parking lots. That's the general language that also allows gravel. Says other uses as approved by responsible officials. So we kind of keep the door open for allowing gravel industrial layout areas or something like that. But you know, there could be a case where there's going to be a lot of traffic on a given area, and I don't know that we want to give carte blanche to. Know, having gravel for large areas, and they're going to be producing a lot of oil and things like that that can't be bought. So that's what we propose on that. Number 29 deals with queuing spaces or standalone coffee stands. So we haven't really made a change from the last time we reviewed this. We're proposing 6 stacking spaces per window, or as determined at the time of the site plan review. So you can propose something less if you have traffic data to back it up. But otherwise, we're proposing instead of 6, the same people as trouble of having to prove up, you know, why they don't need 10. As clarification, if you have a drive-through associated with a restaurant, the number will be 10. And I've been driving around, lately, I've been looking at some of these coffee stands, Starbucks in particular. I've seen 10 cars in a row, easily. And I called the number of coffee places, and they said, oh yeah, sometimes in that part of the street. We try to get them down 5 minutes.
As people have less complicated orders.
Yeah.
It's not very luxury.
So apparently it happens, you know. So I was thinking that nobody would be willing to wait in line just for 10 cars, but apparently they do.
Like me.
Let's see. Number 34, that's in the Highway 99 code. There are some design standards for single family lots. And that would be page number
56. BR is 56, I think.
56. Yeah. So there's driveway width standards in this section, there's architectural standards, and from some of the comments we've received, we've decided maybe just delete that section altogether. So, you know, it's like, we don't really have a review process for inspecting each home that gets approved. We could develop one, I'm sure. But some of the requirements aren't really that extreme or dramatic anyway. So, why have something that's not necessarily needed? So we're proposing taking that whole section out regarding single-family residential design driveways and architectural. And then we've got the new reduced standards for small coffee stands. Haven't really made any changes for those from the last version that we've seen.
Again, just one observation on that one, because I saw some confusion at the commissioner work session, was we have the multiple places, we talked about that queuing. So the queuing is mentioned again here in this section, isn't it?
Stacking.
Yeah, so it's mentioned here and in that other table. Would it be better to put that in the table? Say stands lower than 200? Well, no.
Well, the other.
No, it's different.
It's different because these special standards for small coffee.
So this says 3. So we have a special section where we talk about a different stacking than in the stacking.
Right. Same. So this is this last section, the small coffee food stands is restricted only to small stands that are less than 200 square feet. Yeah. So those have the 3 stacking requirement. And the other section is for those types of coffee food stands over 200 square feet.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess my only comment was, do we want to actually move that into this table so it's all consistent? So you're not looking for
a second line item.
What's that?
We could add another line to the
table. It might, yeah, just for confusion. I heard some confusion there.
All right, that might not be a good idea.
For people that hadn't looked at it before.
Yeah. I'll keep it in the section, but then add it to the table.
Yeah.
All right, and I think that was the main concerns that this body had.
So what are your next steps with this, John?
Goes to the Planning Commission, and there's some problem getting hearing space. It's supposed to go on December 5th for the hearing, but that date might get moved. If you can't find a place to do it, they might try to do it here, but then that's its own problems, because the hearing room is being
commandeered by the sheriff's department that you do.
Doesn't say November 21st is the PC hearing?
It's the work session.
So the work session
is moved to November 21st and the hearing to tentatively December 5th.
December 5th. So is there anything else that we need to provide to John before that hearing, or are we in good shape with these changes?
Well, we probably should provide something either in support or with the comments we have. I am a little concerned about our agenda time today.
We're not going to get through it today.
No, I don't think so either.
Is this something, I know you've been tracking it carefully, would you be willing to outline a letter and circulate that around to everybody?
Yeah, I'll see if I can put together kind of outline. What's the general, does anyone have any strong feelings so I can make sure I capture everyone's concerns?
I think that if we were to make a motion, that there might be general consensus for the changes.
General consensus?
With these changes, yeah. as outlined.
As outlined in the latest.
Okay. Purchase. Go ahead.
I move to support the proposed changes as Janice just outlined for the fall biennial Planning Commission work session, I guess, would be.
Mm-hmm.
I second that one.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Saves the memo face.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll still go. I'm probably not going to testify, but I can say.
We need to testify.
Yeah, and the changes. We've had a lot of input already. I think most of them are incorporated already.
They are.
Or there's at least discussion.
Yeah.
So Jan, those two dates, are the times the same? November 21st is still 5:30?
Yes.
And December 5th is still 6:30?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll keep you in the loop. They're still trying to figure out how we're going to get this, where we're going to do it. So I should change it, let you know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we are falling behind here. Our 10-minute introduction, we're almost at 25 minutes. Two more things that we need to talk about are DEEB member announcements. Any announcements from the membership?
I think Mike has one. Mike has one.
I want to hold on to my space as long as I can. You may have heard I've taken the president position for Columbia River Economic Development Council and such. Need to resign after this meeting, or my official start date is going to be December 2nd. So I look forward to working with you all in a new capacity, but we'll have to sit down in the committee. As much expertise as I'm providing, I won't be able to carry on without me. So.
How long have you been on DEEB for?
Off and on a little bit, but it's probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, a long time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congrats on your position.
Yeah. And then just an announcement that was in the minutes last time that I noted that I was speaking with the planning, with the commissioners yesterday about economic development. That happened. And so that was in my role as the Lands for Jobs Chair for Columbia River Economic Development Council. But I'm going to stay involved in that process and we'll give DEEB updates as I'm informed. And then the last thing that we've got on our introductions is the January board meeting is scheduled for January 2nd. And so Rosie has sent me an email asking if that was a concern for anyone on DEEB and if we wanted to move the DEEB meeting to the next week, so it'll be January 9th. So what's
I'll
your preference?
Around.
You'll be here?
I'll be around at night. So better be on
Okay.
What day are we moving to? To the 9th?
No,
it sounds like we're
going
to
we should move it to the 9th.
Okay.
Because it's on the 2nd, what we're scheduled for. And
you'll be running the meeting on the 2nd.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So it's important that you're. It sounds like we're going to keep it.
Okay.
The second.
Second it is.
Okay. Okay. Next up is joint driveways. Ali?
I sent out the memorandum on October 8th. I'm not sure if you got a chance to read it. It is all the way in the back of your packet. Basically, I did some research and I didn't find any analysis that compares joint driveway saving 3 lots versus 4. but it shows up all the way from that, the code from 1984. That's how far back it goes. I consulted with the fire marshal, and he believes it may have come from the old fire code that probably somewhere reached there. He didn't have a copy, but he thought that might be the case. But nonetheless, I think knowing that we have had four minor deviation for four lots on a joint driveway, we have two cases and we have to go. I think it is safe to say maybe we can go to four, but the problem is that in our road modification code, we do allow minor deviation for increasing the number of lots on joint driveway. And personally, my recommendation is to make it a technical road mod, which requires additional analysis if somebody wants to go to five or six. Because minor deviation there is a very limited analysis, limited review. It's like a gun deal, something that happens all the time. If you read the minor deviation code language, it is for something really small, you know. And, so going to five makes a lot of difference. And just to let you know, you could have a private road or public road, private, which is very narrow, up to 149 feet long, and extend that driveways off of this as many as you can fit. You end up with maybe that the way I look at it, it's a narrow lot, small lot. You can end up with 30, up to 30 lots on a private road that doesn't have any turnaround. And just, you know, in case of emergency, the fire trucks going back and forth and having cars and SUVs parked on both sides, it's probably gonna slow down the emergency vehicle. And then once you get to the shared driveway, you know, it's only 12 to 5 between 20 to business. So there might be some safety aspect that you might not consider. If you would like, and if that's the route you're going, we can change the code and put it in this file, and you are maybe it's not too late to just talk to Chad.
Okay.
To go to four lots, but again, we need to change the code. I should say, I recommend that we change the road mod code and ask for a technical road mod for going to more than four on a shared flight.
Is there a cost associated with applying for a technical road modification?
Yeah, it is more expensive and it requires additional analysis.
Okay, so you're talking about that for five?
Four.
Over four. All right, so we go to from three to four automatically, and then five you would need this technical road modification.
Right.
Okay.
So that's my recommendation. I think that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Discussion on that?
I kind of like Ali's second suggestion with building the floor.
Yeah.
Because four comes up a lot. Rarely comes up. And then it really is more like a private road. So I can see a justification for building more of a road line. You might try to do five. Four is, it's just an even number. It comes up a lot. And it's consistent with the
appears of lots.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So do we need a motion on that?
I'm going to support Ali's recommendation to go to four. Technical road modification to go beyond that.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
And we'd like to see that in the biennial this year, if we can do that. Great.
Yeah,
thank you. Thanks, Ali.
You're welcome.
Got us back on track.
Yep.
Okay, Marty. Fee holiday report.
So I've passed out this draft fee holiday statistics for 2013. We made a few changes to this report that goes to the Board of County Commissioners in a distribution list. So you're the first actually to see it printed out. It actually looks better on the screen. The first thing we did is we rather than having to scroll down to the bottom of a spreadsheet to figure out what the totals were, we put that right at the top. So the very first section here summarizes how many projects we've had since June 12, 2013. So this is kind of the new program, if you will. We've seen 43 projects, a little under 300,000 square feet. Value of the construction is about $7.6 million. The fees we've waived to date from mid-June of this year through October is about $227,000. The applicants self-report what they estimate the number of jobs that will be produced, so about 290. And then projected annual sales is around $77 million. You'll see that there are some footnotes to this first section. The third footnote I wanted to make, special attention to. If you look at the spreadsheet that follows this, if you go to page 8, you'll see ProPac Pharmacy. So they're doing a tenant improvement for a pharmacy, and they say their annual sales is $26 million. Mm-hmm. We don't know whether or not that's going to be taxed or not. So sales taxes are based on the guidelines from the Department of Revenue. And I looked at a table of pharmacy, you know, pharmaceuticals. Depending on if you're selling to individuals or to a clinic or to a hospital, and depending on the type of pharmaceuticals you're selling, some of them are taxed and some of them are not taxed. So I would hate for somebody to say, gee, we're going to see $77 million of goods taxed, because it's probably not entirely the case. So that's the one point I wanted to make. The middle section of this first page gives you the global cases, projects to date, and it's by fund. So since the beginning of the program, which started in the fall of 2010, the Environmental Services and the Fire Marshal's Office, they waived about $54,000. The three departments in community development services and permits, services and building has waived about $790,000, and in development engineering has waived about $290,000. So we've seen about $1.14 million waived from the inception of this program. Then we have the impact fees waived through October. We have the actual amount waived at about 1.4, and then projects that are in the queue that have not picked up building permits, that's when you pay the fee. So we've got an outstanding almost a $2.3 million obligation. So the rest of this spreadsheet, you know, we have, I can probably get this list and send it out with the distribution list, because this is only one tab of a spreadsheet workbook that has three or four tabs. So this is, you know, in the green it has, you know, what is the business, what is the description, how much square footage, what's the address, parcel number, and then the value of the construction based on the various permits that are submitted, and then fees waived, and then we've got the benefits side, proposed new employees, and then projected annual sales. So this is a running totals from June 12, 2013 through the end of October of this last month.
So Marty, can I be clear? So the if you did fees waived today, mm-hmm. that wouldn't include building permit fees if they've not been submitted?
Correct.
Okay.
If they're in plan review and they've not picked up the permit,
then that's not included.
Correct.
Yet. All right. And then if you added $227,000 to $2.29, is that the total cost?
If you add the $227,000, well, the $1.13 is all the fees we've waived to date, meaning from the
yeah.
beginning of the program in October of 2010. Through the end of last month.
That doesn't include traffic impact fees.
No, traffic impact fees are the second to last little
So what I'm trying to get an idea of is, so if you added the 227, what's the traffic impact fee that would be waived for projects June through October? Is that?
That's on a separate tab. And okay. I have to send this electronically because there's a lot.
It's like, what's the cost for each of these jobs?
Sure.
Is here's
questions. Some math.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but if I just take your total fees likely waived to date,
yeah.
Is that the right number?
It's just traffic.
Which one?
2.3 million.
It's just correct. Traffic impact.
And then add what to it?
So we waived 1.4 already in traffic impact fees.
And there's another.
And there's another 2.3.
So the 1.4 is tied to the 289 jobs? Or is the 3.7?
No, it's the 1.4 million mm-hmm. is tied to all the resolutions that have been adopted by the board.
Because so I'm trying to get to what Helen's getting to. Some point you get to a metric.
Yeah,
that says
what's the cost?
How much per job?
Per job, yeah. That's what we're trying to get to. And if it's 227 plus $1 million for traffic fee waivers, then you add the building permit costs in. You know, what's the cost per job? Yeah. I think that's an important number.
Well, this is reflective of the top section is from June mm-hmm. of this year. The commissioners want to know what, one commissioner wants to know what's the new program waiting? Because previous programs had, you had to have 15 jobs and then 10 jobs. And we weren't waiving impact fees.
Yeah.
This is, there's a lot of data here.
Yeah.
And we've tried making improvements every time we've gone through this report. And again, this is not all inclusive. There are other tabs when you look at a spreadsheet. I'll get the address.
And this includes all of the big developments. So the big Walmart that's gone in up at 134, that's all in here. It's not. Where's that?
No, that's in it. That's a, well, that actually hasn't happened.
So they've not paid any, they've not been waived any fees.
Well, they've not done anything. They've got their entitlement, they've got nothing else.
So they were waived.
Like Chuck's Produce was something prior to. So when you look at this on a screen, it'll say new cases and then old cases. All the old cases are prior to June 11th of this year.
Okay. So when that came, when that project comes in for a building permit, then it would get wrapped into this. Would it show up in this number?
Okay. Yes.
So that's going to raise that number substantially.
And we're trying. It's hard to keep track of grandfather projects.
Yeah.
And we actually had projects that were from the beginning of time, and we're saying, you know, you need to resubmit.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I mean, so I think it's important to understand from June on what the true cost is.
Sure. So. But what I'll do is I'll send out the entire mm-hmm. Report when I send it to the board.
Have the commissioners asked you for that extrapolation? What does it cost per job?
Well, they've not asked that. What they want to see is an extrapolation of the benefits that we have. We put together a structure of evaluating one-time sales tax for big projects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're building a $10 million building, the sales tax on the construction materials is a one-time bump that's going to be fairly appreciable.
Mm-hmm.
How much does the county get? What share does the county get of that, please? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
It's like the state collects 6.5%, and then we collect 2.7 maybe?
Six, well, I paid probably like 8 point, not even more than 8.7.
8.2, so if the state gets 6.5%.
Okay. So if the county gets 1.7.
I don't know what it is exactly, but we can get that.
That would be important.
So we're gonna track the sales tax, the one-time sales tax for construction equipment mm-hmm. materials.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna track the one-time full increase to assess valuation, but there's a lag. You know, from the time that Chuck's Produce, for example, was you know, entitled and then partially built to the time the, you know, the assessor gets out and gets full value on the property. It could be 6 months, it could be 18 months.
Sure.
But we're going to track the one-time property tax increase. Then for anything that has a sales tax component, we built a model around sales tax per 100 square feet of retail space, and we can get formulas from Department of Revenue. So we're going to build this model to show what the one-time and ongoing revenues will be.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these, again, there's a lag effect, and I can't report accurately monthly on lag effects. So I talked to the board, and what we're going to do is they have a work session every quarter with the auditor's office, and the auditor's office does a quarterly financial report. So I'm going to piggyback off that quarterly financial report and report out the either actuals that we can glean from data or the forecasts from a variety of sources. For example, we're going to use the assessors, what they value for construction on a per square, you know, per square foot cost. And for, you know, an office building or a supermarket or an industrial building, they have all that data in their system. So a new office building comes online and the assessor assesses that, say it's $200 a square foot, whatever, $150 a square foot. So we're going to build that into the model. When I have that, when I'm able to do that first report out to the board, which will be the fourth quarter of this year, then I'll share that with you as well.
One of the things I'm curious about, Marty, is I know that we've had this program for a while, but what's our baseline? How many of these projects would come regardless of whether we have this program or not? Is there some
other question?
We did, you know, the first year and a quarter, we did a survey, not statistically valid, but we did a survey. We called the applicants and asked them, you know, did this make any difference? And about a third of the respondents said, yeah, we would have done it at a different time, or we would have done it, you know, we would not have done it in this location. But the other two thirds were, you know, that they would have done the project regardless. Now, this is at a time when the program was only geared to tenant improvements and commercial and building permits, not to site plan review, engineering, site inspection, all of that stuff. It was a much smaller program. It would be hard to do a baseline.
Well, can't we just look at like historical and let's not use the total boom year, but maybe go back and look at what year generated in
yeah.
County and use that as sort of focus. My fear about all this is still the fact that if we're continuing this and we're sort of subsidizing development, that we're deploying development for the may come next year, like the home tax credits did a few years ago. We could be shooting ourselves in the foot, and being the home builder's guy here, again, that's going to be pushed off on residential to get backfill. That's deeply concerned.
We can look at, we track all our building permit data. If we look at building permit as a one example, and we break it into residential, single family, and then multifamily and other. And we also have commercial. We can look by month for the past, I think since like 1990. And commercial has, you know, commercial comes in chunks. There's no real, you can't really trend it very well, like residential, you know. But we can look at that data and say, okay, maybe we can kind of put it in quarters too. Okay, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, and do some comparison over time. And throw out the, you know, the crazy hot years and the crazy low years and say, okay, we do about, $10 million a month. What are we seeing in these months for valuation? That's the guide. So we can kind of take a look at that.
Have you guys been able to fund your departments and keep the same level of service without the funds?
that are coming in that are being waived? Are they coming from somewhere else?
Well, the general fund has to general fund be the backstop, and the general fund has they already paid for the 2010, 11, and 12 program, and they actually have earmarked in the budget an amount to be. It's a budget amount to cover these waived fees.
And are you on track?
Sure. Yes,
that
we are. Actually, we're a little less than our budget, adopted budget. So, you know, I will send the full report to you. It does look better on a screen because it, you know, you can this top part locks and you just scroll down and you can see what's what. It has the grandfather cases. It has the grandfather fees waived. But we're trying to make more and more improvements over how we're reporting this, and for us, how we actually put the report together. It was a lot of manual data entry. We're trying to run a report out of Tidemark, which is our permit system, to kind of auto fill some of these spreadsheets. Or actually, Tidemark would download into a spreadsheet, and we can look at the data that way. So. It's a much improved report. Any questions on this?
Marty, just one on the employees. Is that full-time employees? How is that kind of?
Yes, it's FTE. Yeah. So 289.
As they report.
So. Yes, as they report.
Okay. Yeah. So the only question I have is the one that I had before is understanding the tip fees that would be waived for projects that are under the current resolution from June on.
Right.
Not being able to add those two together to figure out a cost per job. And then obviously you would need to be able to add the building permit fees back in again. But the total since day one of traffic impact fee waivers is about $3.7 million. Is that right?
Yeah, if we look at what we are likely to waive,
yeah.
Plus the 1.4, yeah, it's 3.7.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
Yes. Okay. We're definitely back on track here. So, final site plan review process.
I have another thing.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to pass this out as well. So the second part of this is just kind of you asked about whether or not we have the resources. So I have an audio. You'll love this.
I'm waiting.
You will. So I put what's called a decision package, budget speak for. I'm asking for something in the 2014 budget. So I put a decision package into the budget for 3 more plans examiners, 3 more inspectors, an OA, which is an office assistant to work in building and elsewhere, and 2 permit techs to be in the permit center. Okay, so that's 9 people. It's going to cost, fully loaded with all the other things we have to pay for, it's about a $900,000, $1 million expense. And it's in the, I have 2 funds. I have general fund, and I have fund 1011, which is building development. So the fact that we still have building revenues coming in that will offset the cost of these new positions, you know, it's a testament to how strongly some of our, you know, some of the building has been bouncing back.
Is that residential?
It's residential, but it's also commercial and others. But for now, what's paying is residential.
So I'm not getting that then. So not if there's a fee waiver, then how's it coming in from commercial?
It's still coming in from the general fund.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I did was for the board, I had a captive audience with the commissioners one-on-one, and I tried to explain this in terms of, you know, business strategy and a workforce strategy, and you know I
pick this little kind of graphic up from a workforce planning session that I went to where, you know, we see, you know, our economy recovering, and we want to provide, you know, excellence in our service. So the business strategy at the top is, you know, we're seeing economic growth. We want to have a workload and staff balance so that we're not getting too far behind and we don't have people sitting around twiddling their thumbs. You all want, and we want, faster plan review and inspection turnaround time. And again, this all leads to excellence in service. So on the workforce side, you know, we have to recruit talent. We have to optimize that workforce. Through lean improvements, you know, we're looking at business process and technical improvements. Again, all geared toward providing excellence in our service. And then the last, the bottom is, you know, where have we been? You know, where are we today, and what's the future state? With adding more staff and, you know, and by position, when we remodel our permit center this winter, when we open it back up, you know, we've, in the past, we were down to half days, and we've been adding like 2 days and then 3 days up to like 3 o'clock or 3:30.
Yeah.
So when we remodel and we reopen next year with those additional staff, we'll be open Monday through Friday, 8 to 3 or 3:30. So this is kind of a, it's a bit of a story in terms of where we've been, where are we now, and where do we hope to be, or where we plan to be. And I don't put this budget, proposal together with 2014 in mind only. We're looking at 2015-16 as well, so I don't hire people and then let them go, you know, 18 months later. Mm-hmm. So we see the economy continuing to recover and grow over the next, you know, 3 years. So this is something that is will be in front of the board the first week in December. My decision package to add more staff as our workload continues to kind of tick up. So I wanted to share that with the group.
Thank you.
I know one of the last meetings we had, mm-hmm. you know, Mr. Medora was in and asking, what do I need? Well, I do need more staff, but I need budget authority to also hire those people. So that's what I've got into the board, and they're receptive and supportive of this. So just a heads up. Good?
Thanks. Any questions on that? Thanks, Monty.
Thanks, Marty.
Okay, final plat review process. Eric and Chuck.
Good afternoon. So, a few months back, the board had asked staff to kind of look at what is our final plat process right now, what are some potential flaws in it, ways that we can improve that process over time to make it much faster, much smoother for our clients. So one of the first things we wanted to come back to report to you guys today are a few things that we've done so far, and we're in the infancy stage of this process. But there are tools that we already have on hand that I'm not sure we utilize to the best of our ability on the staff side, and in sharing those on the client side as well to make the process a little bit better. So I want to first share these things with you today and then kind of talk to you about some of our next steps that we're going to be testing and looking at, going through the process to see those other places that we can improve that much more. The first thing that I gave to you guys today is a final plat checklist that is actually an in-house checklist. I think in the past it's been used by the engineering departments. I'm not sure if planning came on that they embraced it as much as engineering did, and that is definitely something that we've had the conversation with staff about. How to utilize this tool to the best of our ability, and always keeping it on top in the file so you always know what's going on with the file, what you have, where it's gone, when you get it back, so you know what you have without digging through the file every time, creating the initial efficiency that we may be lacking right now. The second part of it is we've kind of adjusted this a little bit. This is a form that was given out to staff. We're still going to play with the formatting of it to try to make it a little bit more user-friendly. But initially, this is something that was given to the customer, talks about, you know, what's required, go through review when we get it, then who keeps the ball, who has the ball, where is the ball, ends up happening. So we start losing track of things. So I've been working really closely with that in development engineering as we've developed this and kind of shifted how it looks. One of the biggest questions that I think I've experienced in talking to people and as we're in meetings is knowing the date that I can go to hearing. When I'm going to be able to take that final plat, or know my final plat is in front of the county commissioners for their consent agenda and signature. That seems to be the biggest thing that people would like to know. So the idea is, okay, if we can give you the anticipated hearing date that we can establish for you, we figure out, okay, how do we work backwards, what's needed when, how do we get there? If you tell us you needed 2 weeks, the potential to get it there probably isn't if you're submitting right now. It may be that we need 3 weeks, we need 4 weeks. But how we get there is something we work together with you on as the client to figure out what are the steps to get you to your goal of getting signed off by the county commissioners. In doing that, what we did was instead of just making this a form that has just one review and okay, I got it, here's the date, I got it, putting a couple of different reviews in there, showing that okay, first review, second review, even a third review. By doing that, it allows us to help you realize what are we still missing? What have you given to us in that first review? What do we still need as we head into a second review when we submit again? Along with that would be the partnership with the last part of it, which is called a punch list. Engineering uses this. I loved it when I discovered it the other day in a meeting we were having with some clients on that project. And I really think this partnership with this larger sheet, because it allows us to tell you specifically what are we still needing. With each time we're giving you something back, are we really helping you or are we hindering you? So the idea with the punch list is let's help you. Here's everything we still need from you. The other part of all of this is the legacy. This is the MVC stage. These are tools we have. We want to tweak them. One of the things that I am working on right now, and I'm going to be working with Diana on this, is going through a final plat myself. As the leader of the planners and land use planning team, I understand what they do, but I've not actually experienced the nuts and bolts of this process. So as I'm going through it, it allows me to also see, okay, I'm telling you this is the infancy stage. What of this do we need to change? What of this works? What doesn't work? Rather than hearing it just from staff, I can experience it personally. And then working with the client who submitted the final plat, they're going to be able to help us as well. What worked with this? What didn't work? What do we need to tweak? Is there a different tool we should use rather than this tool? So that's one of the commitments I'm making as well in my education of this process to make sure that we can make this as smooth as possible. And as we go through working with Diana, maybe even figuring out where is there waste? Where are the things that, again, going back to the values of leaning, are there things that we could have going concurrently? Are there things we don't need? Is there wait times that could be minimized to make this process that much quicker? So I welcome any questions you have. I know you're seeing this probably for the first time today. But if you have any questions just reviewing it, then if questions develop, I welcome emails, calls, anything and everything, because it's a process, it's about us as a partner.
One quick question I have. And I think I know the answer, but I'm not sure. When we do plats in other parts or in other jurisdictions in the county, we have to take it upon ourselves to submit plats to the county, to the county surveyor for their review. Does that automatically happen during the final plat process? In the county?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure. I didn't see that. I didn't see that on here. I mean, there's a plan review and the county surveyor review.
Correct.
Okay. And that would take place, I would say, simultaneously or concurrently, or is it after first review then it goes to the county survey?
The first round is all of the work.
Okay.
That includes the utility company.
Okay.
So when are you taking your
One was submitted, I believe, yesterday and today.
Which project?
So, huh?
Which project, if you don't mind us asking?
Definitely landing phase.
So,
yeah.
I think it's going to be great. It'll be a great learning process for me to do that much better to help.
So will you come back and report to us what you find from that process and how you're going to tweak the system?
Absolutely will. That's part of this process as well. How do we improve this? Initially presenting it to you today, what do we find?
Okay.
So some people, I know Eric at least, you guys deal with this regularly. What are your thoughts?
Not as much as like Jamie, but yes. I had a few general comments. I'd love to hear Jamie's input as well. And I talked to Chuck a little bit before when we were starting the meeting. But one comment I had was, instead of third review, I think we should shoot for approval. I think it should be first review, second review, and then approval. I think third review kind of sitting on need a third review. And typically, from what I've seen in class, you have first, second, and then
how often does that happen?
Very rarely I have to do a third review.
Okay. It's usually Milo, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. That's our experience.
Yeah. And then I was just kind of going through our notes from our first meeting, and one other item that I had a star by that we were going to look at, and we just talked about biannuals, but we had talked about the other little things that come up, like a code change allowing department heads to review conditions if the situation changes or the condition is no longer needed or appropriate. Okay. I just wanted to bring that back up because I saw it in my old notes, and I think that was something we talked about with Marty, and it came up with Brent as well. He's in that situation occasionally. We had some issues come up where say there's an eagle habitat and the condition changed. There's no longer that's no longer required under the code or from Fish and Wildlife. But we had a condition in there. Mm-hmm. And to change that, did that really require going back to a post-fish review? And then when it comes up, it tends to come up late. And those are the things that all of a sudden you're dead in the water until a post-fish review is required. We just talked about one earlier where there's a little lot change that came up.
Yes.
And trying to expedite those processes during the final plat. The typical situation is there's something not typical will come up. And it seems like that's almost every project has something unique about it where there's very few that they just all go like clockwork. There's mm-hmm. something that comes up. And being able to plow through those barriers, I think will make a huge difference. Instead of hitting a roadblock and going, well, what do we do now? We need to have some judgment, you know, inject it in and get through those barriers. General comment. I think this checklist is great. That was one of the things we talked about at the meeting, having all the requirements in one spot and maybe a timeline as well. Because I remember I saw the other checklist. We talked about it. It was just this portion here. You've added on the first review, second review, or do you guys always have that in house?
Just added that one.
Yeah, so. I like that. It's good tracking.
On the decision-maker ability, let me follow up separately with Marty to figure out if it's really add that into this. You. If for some reason it is, here would be my thought. It's much like the variance we're doing right now with the plat. We're close enough to final plat. I feel like the person who's doing that review is the person that variance went to, because that person's most familiar with the project and they're in the middle of it right now. We should be able to expedite that review and have everything come together to the end very seamlessly. So on that one, definitely for this time around, it will be a smooth process for you on that. But we'll figure out the opportunity to have that condition change.
Okay, now you guys are really busy too, so it's kind of like learning right now. There's a lot of blacks going through your system right now.
There's a lot that come in recently.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, what it says is next year's going to be busy doing this, so it's fantastic.
Yep. So. Thanks for your work.
Mm-hmm. I have to thank Diana too. She's been amazing.
So we want Chuck coming back as early as next month, or is it too early?
Yeah, what's your timeline on going through this process and updating it? Greg's just asking me if it's too soon for you to come back next month, and that may be.
Let me do, at least I said probably too soon, but let me do a tentative.
Okay.
And then maybe I'll keep in touch with Rosie along with Diana, and we'll be okay.
So we'll put you on the agenda, and then if it doesn't work the month after.
Yeah, even maybe 10 minutes to just give you a review of where I'm at.
That would be good.
I don't mind doing that too.
Yep, great.
So, yeah. I just found another that came out, Task Prepping is the recording class by the end of the year.
Yes.
And that was good information. Mm-hmm. But is it too soon? I think you guys are crunched right now, trying to get these things done by the end of the year. The fact that there's memos out there, maybe we should do it in January. Let them get their backload.
He was just going to give us an update.
An update?
So far, what I'm doing with Diana and what I'm learning, kind of what I've learned so far, things that I have
any potential changes to this?
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be good.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, we made it.
You did make it.
Sweet. You're right on track.
So the final site plan review process, Mike's going to give us an update on that.
Yeah, I asked staff to put in the final site plan review checklist in your packet today, and this is kind of the basis for my presentation. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to kind of give you a background of the final site plan review process. I don't know how familiar everyone around the table is with it. I've had quite a bit of experience with it. And so I'll just kind of give you a background, some issues associated with it, and kind of my take, Olson's take on how it's gone in the past. Essentially, the final site plan review process is, the reason for it is to ensure compliance with the land use decision, the conditions of approval, to ensure consistency with the final engineering plan, to ensure documentation and reporting of easements, dedications, and covenants, and ensure that the financial sureties have been secured. And really, it boils down to that. Pretty simple stuff. The timing of it, the final site plan is submitted at the same time that the final engineering plans are, and it follows the same timeline as the final engineering plan review. So the 21-day first review, 14-day second review, and if needed, the 7-day third review timeline. Rarely have we ever had, and generally the final site plan, and staff have been really good about letting us know up front if there are any issues associated with the final site plan outside of the engineering plan review portion of that. And then the final site plan, and correct me staff if I'm wrong, but the final site plan is only approved after the final engineering plans have been approved. And that the planner on that project will be the last one to sign off on the engineering plans as well as the final site plan at that point in time. Kind of running concurrently with this is a final wetland permit that we need to be submitted either prior to the final site plan submittal, of course, after your preliminary approval. So if it hasn't been done previously, it will need to be submitted at the same time. And concurrently, your performance and maintenance bonds need to be secured for that. And the question I have is that the same for Habitat permits also?
When they're required, yeah, there is no final Habitat permit process.
Okay, just the final wetland.
Right. The conditions in the Habitat permit rules require.
Okay. And I'll keep going here a bit. It's been our experience that this is probably one of the best processes that the county has right now. We really haven't encountered any issues associated with it. Having Melissa Tracy and Harriet go through the process with us, they know what they're doing. They advise the consultants of anything that's outstanding. And remember, this is running concurrent with the final engineering plan review, which is a much longer process or involved process than what the final site plan review process is. And so from our standpoint, our opinion would be, you know, I don't think that this process is necessarily broken. Some things that come up, though, and some questions that we've kind of looked at over the years is that are there any items that are required at the final site plan review timeline that could be deferred until occupancy, and those kind of refer to those things that are, it could be more dynamic during the construction process.
The answer is yes.
Stormwater covenants. The stormwater covenants need to be reported before final site plan approval is granted. Well, what if the stormwater plan facility changes during construction? What if it shifts slightly because of on-site conditions? Do we then have to get a covenant release from the commissioners and re-report the covenant? That's a question for staff. Utility easements. The utility easements all have to be reported and in place before final site plan approval is granted. What if the utility easement and are no longer within the easement that has been recorded? Do we have to re-record another easement in order to get that in there? And we won't know where those are until we do as-built drawings. And those as-built drawings are before final construction. So we're looking at maybe deferring some of these items until occupancy or final construction approval, not necessarily final site plan. And an example of this, or kind of tying this into planning, would be that the county is not going to accept the right-of-way until it's constructed, inspected, and approved.
So why should that be any differently from the private side and the side, from the site plan angle? And then a couple of questions that I had, and it's kind of the same, kind of differently. We've run across a situation, and I'm going to kind of take a little side road here, is that I'm to understand that final construction approval and use of a site that has a building on it won't be granted until the building is built and occupancy granted on the building. And again, correct me if I'm wrong. But we're running into a situation where the building on a site is going to be used for, say, bus parking. The building's not going to be ready yet, but the buses need to park there. And we've had to kind of work with staff in order to get that worked out. Now, staff's worked with us and it's worked out fine. I posed this question to staff in the past, and it was a no, you can't use the site until the building's built and all occupancy is granted. And I'm wondering if there might be an opportunity there. And I'm thinking of something along the lines of a facility that has a building, but it's also used for storage, whether it be for vehicles or animals or equipment or materials, lay down areas, more like industrial work, that they want to start using the site for the building. And maybe that's a matter of financing or weather, construction schedules, whatever it might be. There might be an opportunity there to allow for the use of the site before the building is complete. So that's, you know, those are some questions that I have for staff, particularly, and please chime in. You've done enough of these to know that there might be some other things out there from a final site plan standpoint that could be deferred, delayed, whatever, without any risk to the county, but would certainly work better for the developer, the applicant, and might actually work better for reality that everything's said and done. You're not all of a sudden, I mean, how many times do people go back and has built a sewer line and go, oh, that wasn't in the sewer easement, we have to change our sewer easement. I think it just kind of gets overlooked. So I'd like to hear any comments that anybody else has about this. I know it kind of went kind of fast through that. It's a pretty simple process. I haven't had any issues with it. If people have had issues with it, I'd be more than happy to hear about those.
So I think the challenge is the timing. I think everything you said was good, and you brought up, you hit on the most important point. If you're submitting, this is a submittal requirement, so when you're submitting your final site plan, when you look at the sheet, it doesn't say that you don't have to submit anything on there or you can defer it, but you don't have private road maintenance agreement, stormwater covenant. Basically, items 8 through 14, you don't usually submit or have until the very end of the project. So when you're saying you need to submit that application, and you can't get final engineering approval until you have final site plan approval, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think what you want to do, the way the process I think should work is very similar to the subdivision, where you submit concurrently, you start reviewing, but you actually don't get final site plan review until before occupancy, kind of like a final plat report. And that's when you're working on these last legal documents, things like, you know,
final site plan review.
So you have final site plan approval, and then final site plan, yeah, final site plan review, submittal, and then approval. And then these other documents are very similar. They're the same things that show up on the final plat checklist. Developer covenant, stormwater covenant, wetland and habitat covenants. These things aren't done until the end of the project. And what's happening on occasion is not only these items come up, but there's special conditions that get lumped into one category. It's final engineering and site plan approval. And they're lumped in one category, so they can't issue final engineering plans until the conditions. Right, the conditions associated with final site plan, say, covenants. So it's just really, I think the stuff here is good. It's the process and the timing that needs a little clarity.
That's what kind of we figured out.
I think you're on.
So you're talking about two different kinds of conditions. You're talking about design conditions that need to be shown on the final site plan, and
yes,
somebody wants to check those off to make sure that they're on the final site plan as well as on the final engineering plan. And then you've got a whole set of conditions that are to do with covenants or that aren't about the design or on the plans, and those could be deferred to later on.
Yes.
And so what are we asking for here? Are we asking for staff to take a look at that process and come up with either a new checklist here that reflects that?
Yeah, if they have a reason for why they do it the way they do it now, I'd like to hear that.
If I may.
Sure.
It's actually a legal code provision. In the code, it requires that the site plan refinement as we find our construction plan. And it is a sheet in the construction plan. It has to be signed up before break with the construction manager can sign the opening up. We always wonder, and we have a problem with it, like you say. Some people, you know, don't want to be able to take pride of the road. They didn't think about it. Why should it happen at the time of final construction? We have the same issue, but I think it requires some type of approach.
So I understand this final site plan. Okay, I see what you're saying here. But couldn't the easements and covenants and all those legal documents not be part of the final site plan review process? And those items be deferred until final construction?
They would be done prior to the construction completion letter.
So, and they're put in the wrong place. So on this application, and here's a perfect example. Technically, by the code generator, before you can get final engineering approval, because it's tied to site plan, you have to have verification of the installation of the required landscape.
That's impossible.
It's not that far off recording the covenant or the wetland covenant, because again, you haven't been planning to. Those just maybe need to be moved up to the checklist.
The site plan approval has to be done prior to engineering approval.
Yes.
And then once that's approved, then the engineer can sign off and Greg will sign off the engineering plan as a whole set.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely
then,
right.
Then when you have your covenants and your whatever your documents are, they can be done prior to construction completion letter. We will not do the construction completion and do your 2-year maintenance until we have all the documents in. Because right now, if we don't get it, we have no way of getting it.
Right. So you say they can be right now?
Well, it depends on how it's worded in your hearing report.
Yeah, it's
some conditions are in A, and they should be
right.
In C.
They
should be
right
in A. So it just depends on where they're located.
Is that something that we need to kind of sync up with the planners? And
yes, and we've been working on that.
Well, there are a couple things that I've been made aware of. It's making sure that the requirements are in the right bucket, either
that's
in the right,
exactly right
final site plan or final engineering. And one of the things that I've been kind of pushing on is let's not hold up somebody from submitting a building permit because they haven't had their striping done for their parking. I mean, that's just stupid. So there might be some things that we could look at relative to when you want to submit for building permits, because I look at this in a couple different dimensions. One is, you know, you have your site improvements from the ground down, and then for Ott, he also cares about the ground up, building the building. So why would we hold up issuing a, you know, even allowing him to apply for a permit because we don't have the striping done? Well, that's just, so I mean, there are, I would say, a handful of little elements that we can look at in terms of the timing of final engineering, final site plan, and even taking in building permits. What I don't want to get into, and I know the attorneys won't want to get into, is tracking down some of these legal documents as somebody is building and saying, well, we're not going to allow you to occupy until we get these other documents. And the worst case we want to get into is allowing a temporary certificate of occupancy, and we still have things hanging out there. That's the worst time to try to track stuff down.
And so we understand that, but if it's tied to something,
yeah,
there's that carrot out there.
Yeah.
That should take, allay your concerns.
So we can look at a handful of these kind of like almost, you know, misplaced or mistimed,
yeah,
or
that'd be helpful.
Yeah, and we've talked about that just internally. Getting the group of the right people to work on this stuff.
Right.
And
I suggest that we start with the code, because some of this information in the handouts, it comes right out of the code, and then go from there.
Right, and so that plays into then the 60-day review.
Yeah.
Directly into the 60-day review. So, okay. Great.
The next steps here are?
I would hope that staff would come back to us with a similar presentation about how they propose to adjust this accordingly.
Give us a couple months.
Okay.
Thank you.
January?
A couple months.
Can
you
give us a
February?
February.
We're going
to
get
February.
Okay.
February.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
We're going to do a big deal around too.
You're busy.
They got to get the land with that.
So, would it be possible for the people here that really know what the issues are to work with staff or
absolutely
have input with staff during this 3-month period?
Be more than happy to. Okay. Yeah. Just we'll correspond and take it from there. In fact, if you guys get involved, get going on it, just let me know. I can bring Dave up to speak about how things are going and how they're progressing.
I just did.
Oh, by the way, Paul Olson, final site plan representative. That was
you are so being recorded. Do you know that?
I take that back.
Chuck, would you be the lead on that, or
Diana just said yes.
You and Diana, and okay.
We'll partner.
Okay.
Good. Thanks for your work on that model.
Oh, thanks.
Really making it
forward.
Yeah,
good work.
Okay. Anything else from Dave? Public comments.
We had two items. One, okay. Mike wanted to discuss a letter he received in regards to the surface over mining overlay.
Mm-hmm.
And I did want to give a brief update on the stormwater piece.
Yes.
Why don't you go first, Jimmy?
Yeah, not a problem. So we ended up concluding the trial application to the board at the end of October. Again, I'd like to thank Clark County. I know Hans office provided a lot of background for their case. Again, we had all King County, Pierce County, Tacoma, Seattle on our side. We did about 12 days of testimony and then a closing statement today and a closing statement today. I think from my perspective, clearly with all those municipal committees and the private industry, basically saying that there's problems with the permit, I would have to think that we did have a reasonable case and that the District Court Hearings Board will hopefully take a lot of issues that we raised up under advisement. From my perspective, we ended up asking for things from the private sector, and they were pretty similar to what a lot of the municipal committees were asking for. One would be to change the way that they worded the permit is you have to show infeasibility. We would like to have that changed back to the word feasible because it's harder to prove a negative than positive. Secondly, is adding a life cycle cost element to the permit. The way a lot of these lift technicians, there's such a new type of stormwater BMT that we're really uncertain as to how long these things will live out there in that practical world, and then also what would be the cost that will be associated with this. And clearly, the biggest target I think was the permeable pavement issue. I keep going down to that Fred Meyer's down at Grand Central. And if you look at you can just go down there right now, they're cutting up the permeable pavement and replacing it with pavers just because the stuff failed with it. We had example after example cited during the case. Probably one of the best examples was in the city of Bellevue. They had an experience where they bought an $800,000 sweeping machine that was supposed to suck all the material up into the vacuum and make the permeable pavement work. It failed. And so the only thing that worked to prevent the biofouling was to dump a Lily Miller Moscow product into the car. It's the exact opposite of what you want to do, and it really had limited applicability. It only lasted for 3 months in the mosque impact. It's just it was frustrating to us that a lot of the science that the ecology and the environmental community that were sort of selling this story of permeable pavement came out of New Hampshire and California and Arizona and Florida, and it's definitely stuff that where they have bursting rain events and sun comes out and dries it up, not like here where we get drizzle and dark clouds for 6 months, 7 months a year. So in addition to that, we asked for them to take permeable pavement off as the first mandated LID and put it on par with all the other techniques, which I think that's a reasonable request, especially in light of all the evidence that we presented. And then the fourth issue was really when to go to the actual cost of doing these things. And we had suggested that they added a cost factor into that. And what that would trigger is if
doing the new lid techniques ended up doing you a cost run, let's say, of 130% of doing normal traditional BMPs on site, then you could move back towards using BMPs, because then it would not be feasible to have those projects move forward. And to me, the real critical thing there was, as we heard repeated testimony, especially from smaller jurisdictions in the state of Washington, from Bremerton to Linwood, we had a really good testimony from actually a really close friend of mine, who's the community development director there, about doing redevelopment projects. And their biggest fear is, if we make it too expensive, we're not going to have this stuff happen. And that's totally contradictory to what GMA requires. So again, the ask sort of said, don't elevate water quality statutes above all these other statutes that we have to comply with and join it up. So all that being said, I don't expect a decision anytime before the end of this year. They obviously have a lot of witness testimony to go through, and tens of thousands of pages of documents to review before that happens. So my best guess is we'll hear something early in 2014. The other thing I would like to do is publicly thank Peter Tuck from Wilson and Eric again for their valiant effort of running the gauntlet of not only getting my questions, but also going through the gauntlet of cross-exam. I think that they did an admirable job. What I was told by the other attorneys that were there during the case, that they were probably two star witnesses there. Hopefully it does have an impact, and hopefully we'll get some modest changes and a little bit more people there on. There are two different judges this time than we had last time, so I'm a little bit more optimistic. So that's the sort of
thing.
Thank you. Well, my guess would probably be January, February. I think that the board's sensitive to the fact that these ordinances have to be adopted by summer. And so, clearly, if we can get a decision earlier, the better. But
so I appreciate the time. I know we had a packed agenda today, and wanted to just follow up on. I spoke with Virgil Barnett is here, he's with Stordahl. Do you mind going just come up here real quick as well? So we talked, we saw the surface mining overlay, and I think when we saw it, it largely reflected a lot of what the committee had recommended and wanted to move forward. It's since gone to Planning Commission. I believe they made some pretty substantial changes there, and having to do with both some of the designation, kind of the geographic where we're looking at, but also some of the redundancies that are now in the code that those that work with it have to deal with. So I wanted to just kind of turn it over real quick, and if you have a couple minutes, I want to kind of present.
Yeah,
the concern that you have, there was a letter from their attorney that sent that I...
Do we have any paperwork in front of us?
I don't think so, but no. That's something that I know we're not in a position today to make any action, I think, but kind of figuring out what our next steps could be with this. So I wanted to be able to present that to you all so you could figure out what we could do if we want.
And it was Gordy, wasn't it, who originally presented to us?
Was it Gordy?
So it would be good to get him back, and it looks as though this is something that we may want to have
next
immediately
meeting.
On the next
okay.
agenda.
I'll just give you an overview of what's up before that has been before the commission already and what is coming to the commission. The Growth Management Act mandated back in 1995 that the county set aside 20-year reserve of mineral resource, et cetera. They built a map that was basically worthless because they didn't do any testing. There was nothing that followed the criteria that was set aside by Growth Management Act. There was maintenance. There was stuff involved in testing and volumes and quality and et cetera. And they were supposed to update it every 5 years. Well, now they're just getting through their first update. Okay. So there was a mineral resource task force that was given the duties of putting together another map, classifying and designating these mineral resource lands. And also, after the fact, well, it wasn't part of our chore to start with. I was a member of the committee. We were given the task of updating the mining ordinance. Okay. We have about 13 meetings. This started in 2011. We had about 13 meetings over the course of a year and a half. We looked at what the DNR had given us in terms of where to rock with that. But already knowing, having been part of the industry, where to rock with that. Okay. So we applied the best technology that I guess you could say in building this map, and we thought it was a pretty comprehensive map, still do. And it was given approval by the county staff, and it was presented to the planning commission. But as an end result, they basically destroyed the map by pulling two large parcels off that were, in my opinion, the highest quality and largest volume parcels that were on the map. We still have, still haven't been told exactly what their thought process was in their denial. Okay. This has not gone before the commissionership, but if it goes through as it is right now, it's worth this piece of paper because it does not meet the mandates of the growth management director because they didn't get the volumes, the quality isn't there on the other land. Okay. The next thing is before the planning commission is the update to the surface mining code. There's a lot of stuff in there that's going to reduce hours of operations and all the operators. It's going to require us to do water quality testing off-site of a mine. I mean, there's just numerous things. I think we'll send out a basic outline of what we're up against there. We just wanted to let you guys weigh in on what the impacts are going to be if some of this comes down. It's going to be pretty substantial increase in the cost of rock, from transportation to permitting, you name it. It's going to make it pretty tough to be in the rock business and provide a quality product, whether it, no matter what the development is, whether it's municipal, whether it's private, or whatever, it's going to be pretty tough. I think that, in my personal opinion, we looked at all of the revisions that the county staff was recommending. We got through some of them. I didn't really fight real hard in committee. In hindsight, we should have. But in my opinion, the surface mining code should be eliminated because it's totally redundant in terms of what you have to be to open up a mine. Number one, the DNR takes care of all the reclamation. DOE takes care of water quality, etc. You have to meet the air pollution standards. There are state laws on noise, vibration, etc. from classing. And when you, at the end of these revisions of the mining code, what it says, you have to go through site plan. So why don't we eliminate the mining code and just go to site plan? Because that's ultimately where you wind up in.
Is your concern about new mines or existing mine?
Well, the new mines especially, but even existing, it's going to impact. You know, we have, as it sits right now, this ordinance as it's being revised will not apply to any existing mine, but it will apply to all the new applications. But it just seems like they managed to.
If I can step in really quick on that, the catches for the existing mines, if they come in for an expansion, at that point they're triggering this new code on their facility. So that's what I'm concerned
about. Could you say who you are? We
were
required.
Valerie Yuskowski.
Okay.
I'm here on behalf of the board.
Okay. All right.
I mean, that's kind of in a nutshell. I mean, I just ask anybody if they got any questions in reference to what we. I think the thing that stuck in my throat the hardest was the fact that this was done at the county's request. In other words, we formed a committee, we spent a lot of time and energy on this thing, and it was not defended. That's my personal opinion. It hasn't been defended.
It feels like the process kind of morphed, to be honest. I think the process was really intended to be where the new resource areas were going to be, and then suddenly this surface mining kind of got wrapped into that. It's kind of my perception.
Well, I mean, it was, I mean, the staff, if you read the staff report, they were on board with what we did 100%. But when it went before the Planning Commission, there was a lot of public input in which they have the right, you know. But the reason that they pulled parcels off, I haven't found out why. Because it met the criteria. That's what I'm saying. So down the line, it met the criteria.
We haven't seen what happened at Planning Commission. We haven't seen a revised version of the ordinance. So they, what's the timing? Did, Marcy, do you know? When's this going to the commissioners?
I think we go on to have a timeline for you. The Planning Commission has gone through the map changes themselves. Mm-hmm. The next hearing would be on Thursday next week, the 21st, to discuss the policy changes.
And with Planning Commission?
Yes, and the Service Planning Code. Whether or not they would finish that all in one hearing is debatable. So as soon as that goes through, it'll be put on the commission's agenda. Okay. I wouldn't expect that to be until January.
Okay. So what we need is first, we need a copy of where these ordinances are going to end up so that we can take a look at them and take a position, which we can't do. We haven't seen anything.
And do we have any review of the map itself? I don't know how or what we would do as far as that.
Well, we were shown that. Mike showed us that, and
yeah.
We were all fine with what he showed us. I mean, didn't they go from... the entire county was designated to specific areas? And maybe I'm not recalling properly.
Right. I think it was based on new science.
Yeah. And we agreed with that
version
that we saw.
I'm sorry. I think it was based on new science. The maps were all revised from the original 1995.
That's right.
And then, like I said, at that point in time, they weren't done properly because there was no...
Sure.
No data applied to them. There was no test made. There was no depth drillings. Mm-hmm. You know, if they looked at a DNR map and said there was possible outcroppings there, they designated. You know, I could point out the errors of it all night. Mm-hmm. The biggest error that I found in there was they incorporated Camp Bonneville into a mining
So, I guess for our purposes, I'm a short timer here, but I guess what I wanted to be able to connect, Virgil wasn't as familiar with Deeb and what we do, but I wanted to find out our appropriate role in this, both from the designation standpoint and then on the overlay standards, to take a look.
Yeah.
Where are there redundancies? If the overlay was meant to, you know, help identify and expedite some of these processes where it's allowed.
Yeah.
Let's make sure that's the outcome and not not doing something else.
Yeah, I think maybe another suggestion is, since the comp plan is going to get revisited, I mean, it seems kind of appropriate perhaps if there are issues if that gets rolled in the comp plan. I'm not sure what the timing issue is on the new
plan. Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah. I know that the comp plan has to be revised, you know, as the end result is what's happening. I have no idea what the timing is on it. It's just that it kind of started me when they tore the map apart.
So I don't remember being in this position before. Maybe Eric, you know, you can recall when we said we're fine with what staff presented to us. It went to Planning Commission, and then it's been changed significantly.
Yeah, we can comment again.
So,
yeah.
But I think we need to know what we're commenting on.
You need to bring it back.
Yeah. So can we have Mike?
Mike come back in December.
Yeah.
So.
And specifically highlight the differences.
Yes.
Why those differences? I mean, some justification.
Any changes?
So what we wouldn't be able to do anything for this upcoming Planning Commission hearing, but we will be able to take a look at it before it goes back to the commissioners and provide our input.
I appreciate it. Anything? Yes. Any questions that you got?
One comment on leave everything to the state. I can't imagine the county commissioners saying we'll leave it to the state, because the county commissioners are the ones who get the calls, especially on traffic. The state could care less about traffic on county roads. So there will be some involvement from the county.
Sure.
At least
the
road
report. made on one of the assumptions. They talked to the property owners to see if that was actually their way of accessing it, because it is, you know. And I think the DNR will be weighing in on this, because most of the land was taken off belonged to the DNR. and just on top of that, I don't know if, I'm sure you're all aware of it, that all the revenues that come off of royalties on the state land is good. But the big thing that I'm looking at here is there's going to be major cost increases if we have to live by, you know, first of all, we're out there so far now that it takes twice as many trucks to get to where you need to be than what you did 10 years ago. I know I've been there.
We appreciate your input. This is the way Dave is supposed to work.
Absolutely.
To bring the private perspective forward. So without you letting us know, we wouldn't have known to ask for Mike to come back and give us an update. So I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
My apologies, too. I thought originally it was going to be a communication style, so I told him a couple hours difference in the time of the day.
We should have had more of a discussion beforehand.
You're kicked off.
So, any comments from anyone else here? Looks like Alan's got something.
Just real quick, 15 seconds to build on something Jenny said about the timing of the decision on the appeal of the permit. And we do have a short timeline. We have a draft from the design manual to ecology by July 1, 2014. So, you know, sort of a risk management exercise. We can't wait for the appeal to get settled to see if any of these things change. We have to move towards meeting that permit requirement, because ecology has been pretty clear that they have little tolerance this time around for people being late on those things. So we're moving forward with the permit as written. That may require some significant change. The later it is, if it does change, the later it is, the more we're going to have to change. I'm hopeful that ecology will say, if they have to change the permit, they're going to have to put a hold on timelines and kick that down the road. We're going to hope that they do that, and we might spin our wheels a little bit, but we are moving forward with our code manual updates.
So, and that you'll bring that to us. What's the timing on that?
We're talking about providing a status update, and we have a few members on advisory committees, mm-hmm. and can always report the member updates. But January.
It's January.
Status update.
Right.
Yeah, okay. January.
Where we're at.
And the minute we get a decision, I will email.
Is there a dispute aside from the permitting wall? I mean, is there a contingent saying permitting will take your and work just fine? Or is it, to what extent does reason come in as far as pushing that versus the B versus?
Well, it's frustrating, because you have, I think Eric always puts it out there really well, that you have like the theoretical academic view of reality versus the as-applied view of reality. It's unfortunate that our team folks at the University of Washington have their like little control labs, and they test this stuff, and they say it's completely wonderful, not to find anybody that went to the view.
But then
when you're looking at it from the practical side, like Eric, Peter, and I'm sure Andrew have seen that some of the concerns about this stuff is, as applied, there's some serious concerns. One of the things I kept harping on during even the cross-examination was, when this stuff fails, it's not the, no offense to the county, but it's not the county or, ecology that's left with liability with this. It's the developers and the businesses.
It will be the county, though, too. I mean, we're all in it together.
We're sort of all in it together, because it does create life safety stuff. But when the lawsuits start happening, it's going to be, odd. And, Killian and Smetter are the ones that get sued on this stuff. And so I've got to hope, I really have got to hope that we put in enough evidence on our side showing that there are very practical issues about this. One thing to highlight about this is one of the things we pointed out there was, when you're at the actual facility itself that holds the hearing, a few years ago they had a permeable pavement From last fall, I'm sorry. And going up there this year, it was totally replaced in August 2012 because the old pavement failed.
And it was 2-3 years old.
2-3 years old.
So it just did it when we had that other brand new pavement, and it was failing immediately. And I remember commenting on it, actually.
He got a comment on it, and I got some questions in because I found out from the staff that, that ran the building when it got replaced. The board members knew that. So I've got to hope that there's hope there.
Mm-hmm. And that was on a very big budget. It was like, it was, you know, a lot of times they say, well, it wasn't put in properly and it wasn't maintained properly. Well, that project, there was a huge budget and there was a lot at stake to make sure it worked great. And it's, it did.
Yeah.
And they replaced it 3 years later. And even now, I was out there after the child, someone's like, what are you doing? Sitting on the ground, couldn't get the pavement. And I was kind of looking. I could pick the rocks out of it with my fingernail. It was popping right out. So.
Yeah, if you ever want to look at Eric's drawing, he's kind of got a fun list of all his permit payment presentations.
You're really, really bad.
Any further comments? Okay, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.